Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
First, it's Striketober. Now it's Strikesgiving, the new leverage for workers in America. Another tentative deal for UAW members at John Deere, voting underway. And today on the show, the Ohio AFL-CIO and the News Guild crushing it when it comes to organizing. Welcome to the Tuesday, November 2nd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently the platform known as Stitcher. All right, we have two guests on the show today. Tim Berga will be joining us. Tim, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, and there's three subjects we're going to get into. Number one, today, November 2nd, is Election Day, not just in the state of Ohio, but in many parts of the country. Big race in Virginia. That's one to watch. But we have mostly mayors, council, school board issues, tax levies, and it's my understanding that absentee voting is up about 18%. Now, I don't know if that's in certain pockets of Ohio, but Tim will give us a rundown on that. The other issue is redistricting, and this is a hot potato, probably going to end up before the Ohio Supreme Court. And this goes back, 6 years, 2015, when over 70% of Ohioans voted in favor of a constitutional amendment to end the illegal, and let me highlight that word, the illegal practice of gerrymandering when drawing legislative maps. Unfortunately, we're not getting anywhere with this. The five Republicans on the commission failed to uphold the Constitution. And like I said, this is probably going to end up in court. And we're talking two maps, the state maps and the congressional maps. And when it comes to Congress, we're losing one seat. We're going to go from 16 to 15. So they have to carve these up. But how fair will they be? And lastly, we'll get into the infrastructure bill. And I don't know where the heck this is going. Yesterday, Joe Manchin announced that he doesn't want the reconciliation package. He says, okay, let's do the infrastructure. And I agree to a good part of that, because the infrastructure bill is the one that's got bipartisan support, $1.2 trillion. He says by tacking that on, you're holding the infrastructure bill hostage. So we'll get Tim's perspective on that. John Schlois will be joining us later in the show. John is president of the News Guild, newsguild.org. Interesting guy. He became the online editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, small newspaper in Arkansas. And he became the online editor at 21, moving the paper to do more breaking news, using social media, and report live election results. Then in 2013, he joined the LA Times as a data and graphics journalist, writing and telling innovative stories using computer programming. Then he taught journalism students how to code at the University of Southern California. That's not easy to do. That's not easy to do. He ran for president of the News Guild in 2019, and he won that position overwhelmingly. And since then, he has been on a tear. So far in 2021, 1,850 workers at 40 workplaces have led successful campaigns. He's going to run down how that's been happening, especially in the newspaper environment, what we have today. Now, a lot of these are not newspapers. They're online publications. And the last being the staff at Politico and E&E News. They took a major step this past Friday toward giving a voice in the workplace to more than 250 journalists. The other part of the story is trying to save the newspaper industry. And here's a website you might want to check out, savethenews.org, savethenews.org. And this is all about protecting local journalists and keeping communities informed. The Save the News campaign is a fight for long-term solutions to the crisis facing the news industry by advocating for public policy that will do a number of things. Number one, break up the corporate ownership of news organizations. Right now, five companies, own 74% of daily newspapers. That's ridiculous. Talk about a monopoly. Also, provide incentives for financial investors to sell news organizations to civic-minded local investors. And this is important. I bring this up because there is a Wall Street hedge fund that we're going to talk about on the show that has been gobbling up a lot of newspapers and stripping them down. In some cases, they just disappear altogether. So they're just squeezing whatever money they can out of them. And moving on. The other is to provide grants, tax credits, and new revenue for new news organizations and ensure that additional money is spent in newsrooms and not padding a corporate bottom line. Increase access to government records and to protect journalists and their sources from prosecution just for doing their job. The news business is important to the democracy of America. It really, really is. And there's a number of studies that have shown when newspapers leave a community, voter participation goes down. There's more government corruption because you don't have that watchdog. So this is going to be a good conversation looking forward to with John Schloss, president of the News Guild. Making a whole lot of changes and organizing. My God, that guy is on a tear. Striketober is now Strikesgiving. I love that term. Washington Post came out with that. I got to give them credit. They published an overview of the various ongoing strikes and the forces animating the broader upsurge in labor activism. Check this out. In total, the Post reports some 17,400 U.S. workers went on strike in October. And the 119 union strikes launched since January, 15 have been major strikes, meaning they involved 1,000 or more workers. That figure nearly doubles the 9 major strikes launched last year, but still falls below the 30 major strikes in 2019. The Post attributes the strike wave to, quote, a new leverage that workers hold in the nation's tight job market, end of quote. Having seen the massive profits their companies collected during the pandemic, the Post reports they want their contributions acknowledged in the form of better pay and working conditions. Or, as President Biden put it, in response to a question about the pace of labor force participation growth, they're able to negotiate for higher wages and move from one job to another. And that's what's going on in America right now. John Deere, here's the latest. A ratification vote has been scheduled for today on a new tentative agreement between the UAW and John Deere. Now, that strike kicked off after workers resoundingly rejected an initial deal that provided for only a trivial wage and bonus increase. Now, according to a summary of the new terms released by the union over the weekend, the new agreement would provide 10% raises for this year, which is nearly double the 5 to 6% included in the initial offer. There's more. Other improvements over the first deal include 5% raises in both 2023 and 2025, which is a significant improvement over the initial 3% figure. A lump sum bonus equal to 3% of pre-bonus pay for next year, for 2024 and 2026. John Deere is also offering employees a one-time $8,500 bonus if the deal passes today's vote. This will be one to watch. $8,500 bonus. It's also reported that the new deal will either eliminate, and I know this was a big issue, either eliminate or at least reduce the company's two-tier compensation system. That's been a stickler for probably 13 years now. I remember in the financial crisis of 2008-2009, the UAW went forward with that two-tier wage system. And they were kind of pegged into a corner on that one. And ever since, they've been trying to get rid of that. I know in the national contract, they pretty much resolved that. But still, there's a couple of outlets that the UAW represents that are still dealing with that. Hopefully, they'll eliminate that altogether. Let's go to the cereal strike. Contract talks between Kellogg's and the Baker's Union are set to resume today, but the workers are determined not to yield until their demands are met. And that strike appears to be far from over. Meanwhile, Harvard graduate students ended a three-day strike at midnight on Friday. The students affiliated with the UAW picketed outside Harvard University President Lawrence Bacow's address to freshmen and their parents for first-year family weekend. That was Friday afternoon. Now, his speech, this is Bacow, the president, was interrupted by at least 40 undergraduate students and supporters who stood up to demand that the graduate student workers be offered a fair contract that meets their demands. They chanted for a fair contract now and then walked out of the event. The walkout was jointly organized by the Student Labor Action Movement and the Harvard College Young Democratic Socialists of America, two student groups that have been organizing in solidarity with the striking graduate student workers. Just amazing what's going on at Harvard. Again, a very, very rich university. And one more here. Workers at seven Amazon warehouses in Germany walked off the job yesterday in an ongoing dispute over wages and work conditions. Specifically, Amazon has refused to recognize local sectoral bargaining agreements that cover retail and delivery workers. As a union spokesman explained, it is unacceptable that a multinational corporation worth billions earns itself silly and yet refuses to give its employees the wage increases that other companies pay their colleagues. Good point. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, Tim Berger, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part
by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, and you can find more at ulagency.org. Dave Meganhart, who's the executive director, will be joining us tomorrow on the show. Right now, though, let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, and that would be Timothy Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO, ohioaflcio.org is our website. Three things we're going to get into. Today's election day. We'll run that down. Talk about redistricting. Boy, that's an issue that needs some resolve. Probably will end up in the courts, as I indicated at the top of the show. And then we're going to get into infrastructure. But let's start off with election day. Mr. Berga, how are we doing today, sir?
Great, Flash. Good to be with you.
So let's get into the election here. And I picked up an interesting story today that absentee voting is up. And I don't know if this is in the state of Ohio or just northeastern Ohio, and because we have a mayor's race in Cleveland, Ohio, which we have not had. Well, Frank Jackson held that position for 16 years now, but we have two people, Kevin Kelly and Justin Bibb, so that might be bringing out some more voters. But what's your take on Election Day today, Tim?
Well, yeah, it's always Election Day is always a great day. So far, roughly 18% of the votes that are projected to be cast this election have been cast either early in person or absentee. So somewhere around 1.6, 1.7 million voters are expected to go to the polls today. Some high profile races, as you've indicated, mayoral races in Cleveland and Cincinnati and Lima and around the state. The local labor councils have endorsed some 270 candidates and issues that we're helping them out with. These elections and campaigns. Of those 270, about 70 of those endorsed candidates are union members that we're providing a little extra help in our Path to Power program. So a lot at stake here. And after careful consideration and screening, the labor councils and the AFL-CIO are endorsing those that support our issues and trade unionism in general. So that's what's at stake today, and we're ready to get the vote going.
So 270 candidates, and those are the endorsed candidates you're talking about, right?
Yes, from the local labor councils around the state, and where we can, we're assisting those labor councils with getting the message out.
And of those 270, 70 of them are union members. I like that. So that's about 25%, 25% of them are union brothers and sisters. I have to ask you, has that number been going up, Tim, over the years? I know there's been a lot of outreach to unions saying, you know what, you want to change things, you got to change from within, get involved in politics. What's your answer to that?
Yeah, well, we have been encouraging and recruiting union members to run for public office. It's hard, you know, to track because there's so many elected positions. When you just look at township trustees around the state, we're talking, you know, thousands. So it's hard to really know who all is in office and whether they have a union background or not. But we've really been encouraging it through our Path to Power program for union members that are interested in it. We help walk them, you know, through the process, and you know, if they understand and support the issues that we care deeply about, then we'll provide support to them.
That's good. Real good. Have you noticed some of the school board issues on how they have become front page news? A lot of shouting matches, and it seems like there's a tug of war over what's in the curriculum, whether or not they have to wear a mask in the classroom. Have you been watching that, Tim?
Yes, and we have union members running for a local school board, and we've endorsed a number of school board candidates around the state. And the moment that we're in, where everything is politicized, and they're talking about things that are not even terribly relevant in what's going on in those school districts. It's just a divisive politics, and it's a shame, and I hope we can get all this balanced out here sooner rather than later.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, no doubt. The polls will be closing at 7:30 tonight. All right, let's move on to redistricting here. And boy, I tell you, this is really, really confusing. And I'd like to get your take on it. Last time you and I talked about it,
I know there was some tug of war going on. And again, we're going back to something that the voters approved. What was it, 6 years ago? And it was overwhelming. Why don't you just pick it up from there, Tim?
Well, that's right. In 2015 and 2018, Ohioans voted on changing the way that our state legislative districts are drawn and our congressional districts are drawn. They're fed up and tired of all this gerrymandering and the party in power that gets to draw the map, draws it these crazy districts just simply so they can stay in power. So the voters overwhelmingly supported these constitutional amendments in 15 and 18, and they were bipartisan. And we supported both of those issues with a good faith approach that the rules would be followed, the Constitution would be followed. Unfortunately, the state legislative maps, the Republicans on the redistricting commission did not follow the criteria in the Constitution that the voters voted on. So rather than giving the Republicans a roughly 54% advantage in how the maps were drawn, they've given themselves a 64% advantage, and that gives them, would give them a supermajority in the state House and state Senate. They clearly violated the spirit and the rule of the Constitution. Three lawsuits have been filed. The written briefs were due this week from the litigants, the plaintiffs, and oral arguments will begin early December. So it's pretty obvious. Even three of the five Republicans on the redistricting commission have said that they're terribly disappointed in the maps that they voted yes on and that they believe. Right. Yeah, that's how it is, Flash. And now a blow to the Republicans on the redistricting commission. They are supposed to explain how they arrived at these maps. They did not do that. So the Supreme Court mandated them. They were each deposed for 2 hours to say how they came at these maps. And we're finding all sorts of interesting things in there, comments that were made publicly and privately, how the three statewide Republicans on the redistricting commission have said that they didn't take part in the process. They were iced out by the two Republican legislative members on the redistricting commission, and how the courts are going to have to settle this. So they're making a lot of the arguments that plaintiffs are making, they've already made in advance while they voted yes on these. So while that's going on, the congressional maps now are being need to be drawn, and they need to be drawn by the end of November. And if the state legislative maps are an indication of what the congressional maps are going to look like, most likely we'll be in court on those as well. But we'll see how it goes.
Tim, is the same group going to draw the congressional maps that we're talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different process. It goes to the General Assembly. If they can't get it done, it goes over to that seven-member redistricting commission where you've got five Republicans and two Democrats. If they can't get it done, it bounces back over to the General Assembly to get it done. And so far, it's just not really been an open process. There's supposed to be some hearings this week on it. But there were so many hearings on the state legislative maps. You had a hearing up in Cleveland, a field hearing. People came out from all walks of life, all corners of the state, to testify how this gerrymandering has not been good for Ohio and that we need to end the extremism that we've seen over the last 10 years and the policies that have come out of that extremism and put more balance into our governance.
Yeah,
and they ignored all that testimony, Flash. And it was overwhelming from again, all parts of the state to end this gerrymandering. And they failed to do it with the state legislative maps. We'll see how they do with the congressional maps.
Tim, let's talk about the role here of the Ohio Supreme Court. With all this confusion that's going on, I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem like it's going to be resolved. Will that mean that the Ohio Supreme Court will have to draw the maps? Is that a possibility here down the road?
Well, you're right. The final say goes to the Ohio Supreme Court on the state legislative maps and these congressional maps. What the courts will do, it's unknown. Most would expect, if they did not follow the constitutional criteria, they would instruct the commission to redraw the maps. How prescriptive they would be, it's hard to say. But, you know, you can't predict what the Supreme Court will do on this thing. I'm not sure I would expect the Supreme Court to draw the maps, but I would certainly, if you look at the rule of fairness and the rule of law, would expect them to have new maps requested to be drawn. And then, yeah. You know, if the legislature, the redistricting commission fails to follow Supreme Court guidance under that potential scenario, then I guess all bets would be off.
This is one to watch, no doubt about that. Again, 70% of Ohioans voted in favor of this amendment to end the gerrymandering, and the people on the commission just don't see it that way. Very, very unfortunate. All right, let's move on. One more here, and that's the infrastructure bill. This is another confusing one because of just a few people, one in particular yesterday, who held a news conference. I'm talking about Joe Manchin, the senator out of West Virginia. It sounded like he was going to endorse the latest plan, which Biden scaled down to, I believe it's $1.75 trillion. Originally, this was like $6 trillion. And he tried to get Manchin's support, and Manchin is saying no. He says, let's just deal with the infrastructure bill that has bipartisan support. So, Tim, where do you think this is going to go here?
Well, for the American people, we've got to get this done, and I believe that we will get it done. You've got two infrastructure bills. One is the hard infrastructure, which is the surface transportation and roads, bridges, get rid of the lead water pipes, broadband, public transit, to the tune of $1 trillion, $500 million in just reauthorizing spending for surface transportation, and then another $500 billion. To build back our infrastructure better, provide clean energy opportunities and options. So $1 trillion there for the hard infrastructure bill, put Americans back to work, rebuild America. Flash, how many decades do we have to wait until we can get this done? So it already passed the U.S. Senate with bipartisan support. It's now sitting in the U.S. House of Representatives. The progressives in the U.S. House of Representatives are saying, yeah, we support that bill, but we also need to build back better our social and human infrastructure, things that would allow us to fight, climate change, really, okay? And right. Do it in a way that creates good union-paying jobs that we've talked about on this show. Child care, universal pre-K, $400 billion. How long have we been talking about allowing our 3- and 4-year-olds to go to preschool? And Medicare expansion for, hearing services. Extend the tax credit for children. All these things that we've been fighting for and asking for that are transformative are in that Build Back Better Act. They're the human and social infrastructure bill. So that's kind of the jockeying points right now. We're certainly encouraging support for both bills, but we need to get it done sooner rather than later. So we're hopeful that, and let's not forget that, the Republicans really aren't providing any support on any of this stuff in the U.S. House at this point. Now, I do think there's a number of them that would vote on the hard infrastructure right away, just as they did in the Senate. It was bipartisan. Mm-hmm. But we've got to put politics aside and do what's right for the American people. Both of these bills are what's right for the American people and be transformative and completely paid through by having billionaires and corporations just simply pay their fair share. And that's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like what you said. Do what's right for the American people. It's about time that happened in Washington. All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Tim Berge, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. You can find more at ohioaflcio.org. They're also on Facebook, OHAFL-CIO, and you can check them out on Twitter, OhioAFL-CIO. You take care. Stay safe. I'll let you go vote, and we'll talk next month, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, John Schloss, president of the News Guild. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on six platforms now: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently, Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. All right, let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show. Love talking to this guy. He is on a mission. Organizing. That would be John Schlois, who heads the News Guild. The website is newsguild.org. And so far this year, over 1,800 workers, 1,850 to be exact, at 40 workplaces have had successful organizing campaigns. John Schlois, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Good. I'm wondering who's going to start a union today.
And when did you take over the guild? Was it just 2 years ago, something like that? And you're only what, 34 years old? You got some firepower, my man.
We need it. It can come from anyone at any age. But yeah, 34 took over as News Guild president back in, it'll be 2 years in December. So actually, I guess here in a month, I'll be celebrating 2 years as president with hopefully more people unionized.
That's awesome. Well, I have to ask you, and there's a lot of things going on in America, and I was just reading about how many strikes. In fact, it was Striketober. Now that we're in November and the holidays are around the corner, they're calling it Strikesgiving. We've got over 17,000 workers that went on strike in October. 119 union strikes launched since January, 15 major ones, and a major strike is over 1,000 workers. And I was thinking to myself before I called you today, there was a time in America when there was a labor beat reporter. And I'm going back to the 50s and 60s when you had union density like 33-34% in America. With all these strikes going on, don't you think we might have to bring that back? What's your thoughts, John?
I agree. We definitely need more coverage of working people, more labor reporting. One of the major issues has been just the huge decline in jobs for news reporters across every beat. So there are fewer people covering education, fewer people covering city government, and fewer people covering labor. One of the benefits, though, if there is a benefit in this darkness, that is basically, losing half of the news and newspaper reporters in the last 20 years is that because there is a union movement across media right now, reporters are actually experiencing and understanding labor, and they're understanding it by actually doing it. So just on Thursday, we had a win for workers at the Asbury Park Press up in New Jersey and a couple other places. And then Politico, a large online news website About the Hill and other things happening in Washington. They just announced, the workers there just announced a campaign at the end of last week. So, you know, when more and more media reporters, reporters in general, just go through the process of understanding what a union is, they understand the basics of leverage and power. And they actually start to think about all their stories from a perspective of that power and that leverage, and what is the person that they need to talk to? So they don't immediately run to a CEO for a comment. They go to workers. So there is a sort of benefit in unionized media workers, even though we've got a huge loss and we don't have the labor reporters that we used to.
Yeah. Now, the organizing that you're doing, you mentioned a couple of newspapers, and newspapers have been struggling, let's be honest here. But are you organizing both with the newspapers and the online platforms, the news organizations that are specifically and solely online? Is this a combined effect right now?
Yeah, and we've been doing that for a bit. You know, places like BuzzFeed News have been News Guild for a couple of years. So we've expanded, you know, beyond just what you think is, you know, print media. I myself, actually, back when I used to work in the news industry, I have a background in computer reporting and would try to dream up new ways to tell stories using, you know, the medium of the internet.
Yeah.
Politico is a recent one, but there's a lot of other ones. MinPost is a small nonprofit digital news organization in Minnesota. We've got, you know, like I said, BuzzFeed News. And a lot of places are just transitioning to be digital only. You know, they're doing fewer and fewer print days. So basically everything is going to be digital, you know, within a couple of decades anyway.
No doubt about that. Yeah, digital is pretty much exploding right now. John, if you don't mind, let's talk about how these campaigns are starting, because it's very grassroots. Maybe you can... And we have a national audience. We're on six platforms, as I indicated. And there's probably a lot of people listening right now. Yeah, you know what? I think I need a union in my workplace. More and more people are saying that, but they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. Talk to me about what's happening, at least in some of these newsrooms and these online publications that are actually organizing right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, so a lot of times it just starts with conversations. I mean, that's what a good union is it's conversations with one employee talking to another employee, you know, as colleagues. They're talking about their issues. When you start to build up those conversations and actually just focus them, right, you're making sure that we're talking to 100% of our colleagues, you end up finding that there are similar issues that are coming up for similar people. And you'll find out that there are more widespread issues than you realized before. So a lot of it starts in that way. I mean, that's how it started with me. I remember we had lost our accrued paid health care. You know, this was building up in our paychecks every 2 weeks, and it was how many days off that you had. And that was money that you could basically take when you left the company, or if you needed to, like, bank a lot to have a kid or prepare for some kind of medical treatment, you could bank that money. Well, the company just ripped it away from us. So we all across the company lost this benefit. And that really catapulted us, along with a lot of other issues, into having those conversations. And then you find out it's not just that issue. It's issues of pay inequity. It's issues of mistreatment of managers who are abusive to your colleagues that you didn't know about. And so you build up all those issues, then you start to think about ways to actually address them through collective action. So that's how it starts, is like people really talking about their issues on how they can improve their workplace, right? How can we actually make it better by having a voice in that workplace? You figure out, you know, your rights under the National Labor Relations Act. A lot of Americans don't, unfortunately, know about their Section 7 rights, where they're protected to have those conversations with colleagues. Those are protected conversations. And then, you know, from our perspective, usually by that point, you know, some worker at a workplace is reaching out to us and hopefully reaching out to another union to figure out, well, what do we do from here? And you get support from a larger union in that process.
John, let me ask you about wages. As you know, a lot of people are quitting their jobs. They're sick and tired of being on the front lines. They call them heroes. They're not getting paid as heroes. And I'm just wondering, Is any of that being reflected in the news industry right now? And I'm just kind of curious because the industry, and they're saying, oh, look, the revenue, advertising revenue, especially for print, is not where it used to be. So with that being said, what's happening with wages in your profession?
Yeah, wages have been pretty stagnant. You know, a lot of news reporters and other journalists inside media, especially if you do not have a union, it's typical that you do not get a yearly raise. I mean, it's very typical, which, you know, a lot of other professions, there is a built-in raise, usually right. to keep up with inflation.
Right.
That just doesn't exist for a lot of people in media. So that's been a huge issue. Pay inequities have been a huge issue. And also, one thing that's, you know, kind of been illuminated in the last couple of months is the issue of people working over 40 hours a week and not being paid overtime. We've got a company, the largest company in the country for newspapers, Gannett, that has pretty systematically convinced people, you know, the mid-managers are convincing people basically not to take overtime, or they can only take it if it's approved ahead of time. And putting people under pressure not to file for overtime. But you get a call in the evening and your editor has a question about, you know, this thing that you wrote in your story or this fact or this name to make sure it's correct. Well, you picked up that phone and you had that conversation for 30 minutes. You should get paid for it.
Right.
And so we've actually looked into that. We've been analyzing it, and a lot of people have spoken out about it. But yeah, I mean, there's wage theft on kind of all ends. And the companies, meanwhile, are actually pretty profitable.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, many of them are, especially Gannett, no doubt. John, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Save the News campaign. This is really, really important. But first, I want to drive you to the News Guild's website. It's newsguild.org. You can check them out on Facebook, News Guild, and follow them on Twitter, all News Guild. John Schloss, the president, he's coming back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin John Schloss. John is president of the News Guild, and he's also involved in this campaign, Save the News, savethenews.org. Now, John, is this something that you started? And maybe give me a little history on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we started it, I guess it was probably last year was when we really launched it. And it was right when the pandemic began, because basically the situation all across the country, and folks will know this, I mean, we just went into a lockdown. Well, people were not buying things. They weren't going out. All events publicly had been canceled as the pandemic spread across the country. And local newspapers really suffered. They basically lost all of their advertising revenue, and their subscription revenue for a lot of places was not able to match and keep things afloat. So we launched a legislative effort, which was really aggressive and very historic for us. Typically, our members are pretty apolitical because they have to cover politicians. So we, mm-hmm. we tend to stay out of partisan fights. But we knew we had to engage. So we actually, for several months, spent a lot of time lobbying for good legislation and won it in December of last year, which was an expansion of the Paycheck Protection Program. And that helped save thousands of newspaper jobs. I mean, that program existed for small businesses, but we were able to get specific things to support local journalists as well. And now we're actually pushing for even more support because this problem isn't going away. We are looking at losing a lot of newspapers and more reporters at the local level right now. So we're supporting the Local Journalism Sustainability Act through the reconciliation process as we speak.
Well, let's drive our listeners to the website. On the website is a really good video, and this kind of says it all about what's happened in America, because when newspapers and news outlets go away, there is a profound effect on the community, and we'll talk about that more. But let's listen here on America's Workforce.
Do you live in a news desert? News deserts are areas where Americans have little or no access to local news in their communities, and they're spreading across the country. More than 2,100 newspapers have disappeared since 2004. Half of all counties in the United States have only one newspaper, and more than 200 counties have no newspaper at all. Since 2008, the number of journalists covering cities and towns across the U.S. has dropped by nearly a half, and more than 11,000 journalists have been laid off this year alone. COVID-19 has ravaged local newsrooms and made all of these challenges even worse. Our communities are stronger and more vibrant when they have access to reliable local news. Contact your members of Congress today and ask them to support local journalism. Find out more at SaveTheNews.org.
Again, SaveTheNews.org. John, I want to talk about what there's a hedge fund that has been gobbling up newspapers and stripping them down. And this is nothing new. I mean, you got these crazy hedge funds for years, and they whether it's a pharmacy chain, a grocery chain, a steel company. I saw that with the steel industry years ago, but they've been doing it with newspapers. And why don't you refresh me on who the bad guys are and what they're doing? Go ahead.
Yeah, the boogeyman, the main bad hedge fund that's affecting the news industry, but is also, like you mentioned, affecting other industries, is Alden Global Capital. And what Alden Global Capital does is they look for newspapers that have real estate holdings and basically cash on hand. So what they're looking for is a place to go and strip mine and shut it down and try to get it down to as bare bones of an effort as possible. Getting rid of the real estate, if there's a building downtown, that's usually where newsrooms have been located, selling that off, and also then going after and cutting jobs, cutting salaries, cutting benefits. And Alden Global Capital has done this pretty methodically around the country. You know, they purchased the Denver Post, about 8-9 years ago. And, you know, that newsroom back in 2012 had 184 people in it. It's been a News Guild newsroom for a long time. Now it has about 44 people in it. It's just gone down massively. And Denver is a large community that deserves good local reporting so that the people in Denver actually have a voice. But this is what they do. And, you know, recently, you know, a few months ago, they were able to buy up Tribune Publishing. So basically took control of the Chicago Tribune, the Baltimore Sun, the Allentown Morning Call, and many other newsrooms. And they're doing the same thing there. I mean, they're just strip mining it. That's what they do. And so they're really damaging to our industry. And, you know, it has consequences for our democracy, because when we lose journalists at the local level, there's no one minding the store. Corruption in city government goes up, partisanship goes up, and people end up paying more taxes because of that corruption.
And there's less voter participation. I know NPR did a story on this recently, and they found in the communities where they lost a newspaper, people just didn't even bother to engage themselves in the political process. And that has detrimental effects down the road. I mean, there's so many components to this. But that being said, now there's a couple of good players, and I hate to say this, like Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon. Does he still own the Washington Post, and is he still kind of hands off right now?
He does, and yes, he is. Washington Post, also a longtime News Guild workforce. And you know, Jeff Bezos is pretty hands-off, from what I understand. He does not sit there and dictate, you know, the editorial slant of the paper. But that is a newsroom that has a lot of problems that are created by management. I mean, there is vast pay inequities in that newsroom, and the company has the money to fix it, to make sure that women and people of color are paid equitably compared to their white male counterparts.
Yeah. What about like the New York Times? Everybody quotes the New York Times, vibrant news organization. I know they're unionized. How are they holding up right now?
Well, as of their last reporting, the New York Times has $947 million of cash just on hand right now. that's at the end of October. You know, they've reached 8 million subscribers. And they've actually they've got in a lot of places more subscribers in places like Dallas or Los Angeles than the local newsroom has in subscribers. They're doing really well. At the same time, though, I've got to say the New York Times management has actually been fighting our workers and slowing down negotiations at Wirecutter, which does reviews for electronics for people to pick up. And they also have been slow walking and fighting the workers who are trying to form a union in the tech side. These are the people who build the website, they do crossword app, things like that. 650 different folks are also being fought by the New York Times. So they've got all the money. They just still don't like unions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They still have that greed down pretty well, no doubt. All right, I want to get back to the Save the News campaign. Again, the website is savethenews.org. And it sounds to me that you've had an impact since you launched this last year. What is the game plan going forward? And with all this labor unrest going on right now, I mean, this might be a good time to seize the moment. What's your thoughts?
100%. You know, the thing that we need in this country is more local reporters, because you got to, you know, the New York Times is not going to be covering the local county elections, right? You need someone at the local level who's going to be telling you about the candidates and what the issues are. So what we're doing right now is focused on a piece of legislation called the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. It has a tax credit built into it to basically tie to a job. If you've got a local journalist on the payroll, you can get a $25,000 tax credit as an institution, whether you're a digital-only, print newspaper, for-profit, nonprofit, it doesn't matter. And we've been really pushing that hard with several other folks across the industry, including management and including the nonprofit and advocacy folks. That's been our big push, and we're trying to get it through reconciliation as we speak.
Well, is that part of the bill in Washington right now when you say reconciliation? Am I understanding that right?
That's right. We've been sort of on the bubble, and we're, you know, a tiny, tiny portion of that, like a tenth of 1% of the total cost of the bill as it stands, you know, where it stands is like, you know, about $1.74 trillion. So we're a tiny portion of that. We're trying to stay in. You know, we've got, in terms of support, we've actually got support from not only Chuck Schumer and many folks on the House, but we also have Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin, who typically have been kind of slow walking the issues in Capitol Hill.
Well, John, the very fact that you got Manchin and Sinema on your side on that part of the reconciliation bill speaks volumes. So my hat's off to you. And I think we're going to have to leave it on that note. Let's stay on this issue. Again, drive people to the website. There's two websites, newsguild.org, newsguild.org, and savethenews.org. We have to save the news. Keep America strong. You take care, my friend, and please keep in touch, okay?
You too. Thanks so much for having me, Flash.
John Schlois, president of the News Guild. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Iron Workers Safety and the United Labor Agency. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.